Welcome back to today's Intelligent Medicine Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and today's guest is Dr. Walter Longo. He's director of the Longevity Institute. He is a longtime longevity researcher, and he is also founder of createcures.org. And by the way, you say that proceeds from the book, The Longevity Diet, go to Create Cures. Is that correct?
Yes. In fact, the rights of all my books now belong to Create Cures. So yes, everything goes to the foundation. And the mission of the foundation is to try to come up with complementary strategies to standard of care medicine that can protect, both make the therapy more effective and also protect the patients, and try to do it in a way that is quick, meaning that we're the foundation is not focused on what we're going to do in 20 years, but what we're going to do now. You know, so patients contact me every day. I maybe get 20 emails a day from patients, and they all have problems, and they, of course, they're followed by doctors, but a lot of times they're very confused about what else can they do that has got enough evidence to be considered during treatment, especially with the nutrition. And so that's what Create Cures focuses on.
Do you personally fast?
Yes, I personally fast. Well, I do the fasting mimicking diet a couple times a year.
Uh-huh. And your eating habits, do you have three square meals a day? Do you avoid snacks? Do you restrict your feeding times?
I basically, with some violations, follow everything that I talk about in my book. So, for example, in the book, I also, in addition to the 12 hours that we just discussed, I also talk about when I gain weight, and when somebody gain weight, go to, instead of what we hear, which I think is a bad idea, of five meals a day, go to two meals a day, breakfast plus lunch or breakfast plus dinner plus a snack, so two and a half, let's say, meals a day. And I've been using this for many years to make sure that I keep a constant, stable weight. And I think the five meals a day is certainly been a contributor to the epidemic of obesity that we have in the United States, which is really in the world, not just the United States. Now we have close to 25% of the world population has got metabolic syndrome. And I think we have to thank this bad idea of the five meals a day for part of it.
And snack foods, and also the traditional, really anachronistic dietary advice, which is fend off hunger. Make sure that, you don't get hungry, because if you get hungry, then you're going to lose control and then you're going to eat too much. So have frequent snacks through the day, and, maybe not such a great idea from the standpoint of your research, which shows that the body needs rest from, eating cycles.
Very bad idea, because hunger, people don't realize, and this is, it comes from, people not doing research and not probably reading enough. Hunger is only when you make the switch, right? So let's say that you're doing five meals a day now, and you go to two, you're going to be hungry for a couple months. After, the body understands that you're doing breakfast, then you're doing, let's say, 100 calories a snack for lunch, and then you do dinner at 7 p.m., the body doesn't get hungry. I mean, if you look at centenarians around the world, that's what they do. They've been doing this for 100 years, and they weren't trying to do anything for longevity. They did it, and they, once you get used to it, you're not hungry in between. Well, now, once you make the switch, then of course you're hungry, because your body is used to having all these meals, and so you just have to get through that transition period.
Let's talk specifically about some disorders. In particular, fasting and cancer, or FMD and cancer, and caloric restriction as an adjunct to chemo. Because, traditionally, when you go to the oncologist and you've lost weight, they'll say, oh my goodness, here, we're going to order you some Ensure because we want to make sure you don't waste away. Is this precisely the opposite type of advice we should be giving to patients getting chemo?
Well, it's very tricky, and meaning that if a patient has a sufficient weight, hasn't lost a lot of weight, it's got a lean body mass, muscle mass that is in the normal range, then certainly our initial trials on with the fasting mimicking diet with fasting suggest that it's better to fast the patient, but then make sure that the patient returns to a normal weight, normal muscle mass, because they do lose some during the fasting mimicking diet. It's counterintuitive, but the starvation in all organisms that we've ever tested makes the organism much more resilient, but it doesn't make the cancer cells more resilient. And that's really what we call differential stress resistance and differential stress sensitization. So sending the normal cells into a protective mode but making it more difficult for the cancer cells. Now, the cancer cells, you're talking about ensure. Well, the one thing that the cancer cells are counting on is a lot of amino acids, a lot of sugar, and a lot of growth factors. And that's exactly what you do when you overfeed someone. Now, it's also true that if you underfeed someone, then you can get from one problem to the other. So the immune system can start shutting down, and other growth factors, for example, it's okay for them to be low. But if they become too low, now you could contribute to frailty. And so it really seems it's a very tricky game that we're now in a lot of clinical trials that we're running. We want the patient to stay healthy, stay with a good weight, but be very well nourished, but not very well nourished with anything. Very well nourished, so maybe the ideal blood glucose level probably is around 75 or so. We want them to also try to stay as close as possible to a vegan, to a pescatarian diet. So they have fish, they have the essential fatty acids, they have B12, etc. But they don't. This diet doesn't make it doesn't promote cancer growth. For example, if you have high protein, IGF-1, which is very well established protector of cancer cells by protecting cancer cells from undergoing apoptosis. Now you're going to have high levels of this IGF-1. And so now you have a systemic protector, against cancer cell apoptosis. And that alone is a problem. And this is just one of the problems. Now, of course, you feed in the amino acids to the cells, you feed in the sugar. Cancer cells, need more sugar usually than other cells. And you see how that feeding could be beneficial to cancer cells more than anything else.
Inflammation plays a big role in many of the conditions that afflict us, and it seems to go up as we age, and it can be a cause of many of the diseases that curtail our lifespan. Does FMD have an impact on inflammation?
Yeah, so we've shown a clear effect on inflammation in mice by showing about the inflammatory diseases that were cut about in about health, and in lifelong use of the periodic fasting mimicking diet. And in the human clinical trial, we show a major effect in all the people that had high systemic inflammation measuring the risk factor of CRP, C-reactive protein, for cardiovascular disease or cardiovascular disease risk factor. And so all the people, all the patients, I think either all of them or all of them but one that had high CRP or higher than normal CRP, they returned back to the normal level. And this seemed to be a fairly long-term effect. So, the diet seems to have a powerful anti-inflammatory effect. And now we're, of course, very excited about hearing back from the thousands of doctors that are recommending the prolonged fasting mimicking diet, because I think we want to hear about how they use that with inflammatory conditions, etc., and maybe design clinical studies based on that.
Indeed. Another form of aging is what's called immunosenescence, which is the aging immune system, seems to leave the body more vulnerable to certain diseases. Perhaps cancer surveillance is reduced, perhaps surveillance against certain infectious diseases is reduced, and then there's this autoimmunity that's another form of immune deterioration. Are there immune system effects of periodic mild deprivation?
No. Yeah, so yes, and I already talked about the multiple sclerosis study that we published, both mouse and humans. We published several studies looking at the immune system, immunosenescence, and in mice you have both a decrease in white blood cells and also a decrease in what's called the lymphoid myeloid ratio. So there are more, the blood cells switch to the lymphocytes are decreased and myeloid cells increase. And so we see the periodic fasting mimicking diet reversing this and rejuvenating the profile of immune cells, making it look a lot more like cells from or blood from younger mice. So now we're doing a number of additional immune models. We are doing, for example, autoimmune type 1 diabetes. We're looking at Crohn's, etc. So we suspect that it will have effects on many different autoimmune diseases.
And of course, there's the area of neurodegeneration. And you mentioned earlier, you touched upon Alzheimer's disease as a consequence of perhaps lack of a resting state of the metabolism due to periodic episodes of food deprivation. Something going on there as well?
Yeah, so we published in the mice protection from cognitive decline, meaning the mice that were placed on the periodic fasting mimicking diet, they did a lot better when they're old, older or even very old as far as cognitive performance. We started to do functional MRIs in people, and we haven't published this, and we also now are doing Alzheimer's. We have shown that by just decreasing essential amino acids periodically in the mice, we could delay the symptoms of Alzheimer's disease. But now we're looking at the fasting mimicking diet in Alzheimer mice, and also we just received funding in Europe for a clinical trial on mild cognitive impairment, so that these are people that have pre-dementia, they're in the early stages of dementia, and we're going to do about a year-long study on I think a group of about 60 Alzheimer's patients, or MCI patients, mild cognitive impaired patients.
Well, that sounds very exciting. So there are a couple of ways to do this, and in your book you outline a specific diet. I mean, so it's you lay the scientific groundwork for it, the theoretical framework, and then it switches to sort of cookbook mode, and you have longevity diet, a 2-week meal plan. What are some of these meals like? I mean, obviously, fasting is daunting. People get hungry. Caloric restriction is a drag. So how do you keep it interesting and tasty and enjoyable?
Yeah, so the book is divided in two sections, and one is about every day, and one is about the periodic fasting mimicking diet. So the periodic fasting mimicking diet, I think it should only be done with the kit called Prolone, mm-hmm. and that's available for, I think, a reasonable price, not much more than people would spend in 5 days shopping for all these ingredients. And again, I don't benefit financially from any of this. All of it, they will go to me, goes to the foundation, and I don't even receive anything from the foundation in terms of compensation. I just want to make point this out because people sure. then might think
yeah,
they have accounts.
This is a pitch, right? Exactly. But what's the Prolone? It's a medicinal food plan, right? And it's designed to create maximal satiety, while at the same time restricting certain nutrients, right?
Well, it's designed to mimic fasting, meaning to be as effective as water-only fasting. But obviously, the compliance goes up manyfold, and the safety. So that was one of the main reasons was the safety. There are a lot of things that people don't understand about water-only fasting, particularly. And water-only fasting should only be done in a clinic. Mm-hmm. Specialized clinic, by the way. Mm-hmm. So, of course, people could do all kinds of things, and maybe they get away if they do it 10 times, 9 times out of 10, they're fine. And then the 11th time, they do it in the wrong place at the wrong time, and they may pass out, Yeah. So this is just one of the many things that can happen. Of course, to people that have various problems, it could be very dangerous. So anyways, the prolonged fasting mimicking diet was a way, it was actually something, it was addressing the concerns that came out of the clinic here at USC Norris Cancer Center when we did water-only fasting for cancer patients. And basically the patient didn't want to do it, and the oncologists were concerned about doing it So it took us 5 years to just collect data from 18 patients. You know, finally we published that. I really realized that how it's probably not a good idea. Also because in the trial we had a nutritionist, we had oncologists. I mean, patients were really followed. Now imagine somebody out there doing this with no help. So yeah, the fasting mimicking diet is the only way I think that this should be done. Hopefully at some point this will be reimbursed by insurances and it'll be free to people. But, right now, you know, it does take a little bit of an expense. But the rest of the book is really about everyday diet. And you mentioned the 2 week plan. And this is, a very doable, free, meaning people just go to the store and buy all the ingredients and all of it is described in the book. And I think if people follow that, then the need for the fasting mimicking diet and maybe be once or twice a year. It's a mostly vegan fish a couple times a week diet. And I really made an effort to go and look around the world, whether it's Okinawa or Loma Linda, California, or Italy, Sardinia, Calabria, and pick foods that people always found to be very tasty and very doable, and not try to go to the extreme and get foods and ingredients that are sort of, you know, modern and progressive, you know. So I wanted to make sure that the people couldn't complain, oh, now you're coming up with this crazy food. It's food that people have been eating around the world for hundreds of years, and all of it, right? So every single recipe that I picked, I think, is in that category, maybe with very few exceptions. And so, yeah, I think it's a good way to also say you don't need to eat crazy foods and things that are just strange to you to be healthy. But it does. It's particular food. I mean, it's not what most people eat, but it is what most people used to eat.
And what if you're already skinny? Is this something that will cause you to become emaciated, or does the body know at a certain point to adjust to a less rich caloric intake?
Well, I mean, this you eat a lot with this diet. I mean, and that's a 60-30-10, so 60% carbohydrates, mostly coming from legumes and the vegetables, 30% fats, mostly olive oil, nuts, almonds, etc., salmon, for example, right? So, and 10% protein. So, it's a diet that most people are not going to lose weight. I mean, I have that. I, you know, if anything, I tend to, when I eat three meals a day, in the periods that I eat three meals a day, I tend to gain a little bit of weight. And I'm in, you know, in the 20 BMI, 23.5. So, you know, the sort of ideal weight. Based on most medical associations around the world and also based on epidemiological data. So you can keep a very healthy weight and eat a lot, you know. So in the book, for example, I show the comparison of what we do and what we should do in terms of volume. And I show, you know, let's say you have pizza and cheese or a pasta and cheese, and I pick some Italian dishes as an example, but it could be done in with any nationality. And then I pick one where you have so you have lots of pasta and lots of cheese versus 50 grams of pasta, 300 grams of like a full, let's say a can of garbanzo beans or chickpeas, and then 150 grams of vegetables. Now this is a huge dish which fills your stomach and sends signals to your brain that you can stop eating now because you've really had enough. Instead, the pasta and cheese dish has got more calories. Mm-hmm. I put in there, it's like 1,100 calories versus the 800 calories for the dish that I just described. It's much smaller, and it's going to make you hungry. Yep. You're going to, by the end of it, your stomach is not full, and you have all these empty calories, and the signal to you is to keep eating, right?
Right.
And this is a big mistake that people make. You know, try to go from this bad pasta and cheese dish to like raw, you know, vegetable only, and people can't do that. You know, this is what we realize when we're doing clinical trials. You just have to make it reasonable for people. This is why for an Italian, if you had 50 grams, 60 grams of pasta, that's very reasonable, and they can continue this all their life. If you say go to zero, then they're gonna do it for 6 months, a year, and they're gonna drop it. So that's another a very important point of the book. Don't try to overdo it, because then people lose weight and then they regain the weight, mm-hmm. and more, and they'll
that's even
gain
worse.
Health.
That weight cycling has actually been demonstrated to be very harmful to the in terms of the ultimate goal of weight maintenance, but also in terms of many other diseases.
Absolutely, yeah. So the yo-yo diet now is showing that, especially if you do extended times of these extreme restricted diets, your metabolism slows, and then not only you regain your original weight back, then you gain more, right? So much better to identify something that you can live with the rest of your life. It's reasonable. It's going to take you more time to get there, but that's okay. And also, I think it's very important. People may hear this and say, oh, high carbohydrate diet. You know, we demonize fats for a long time. Now we're demonizing carbohydrates. And carbohydrates are very healthy for you. What's very unhealthy for you is sugars and starches, or sugars and starches if you have a ton of it. But, you know, I mean, starches, pasta, rice, if you have a little bit, then they're perfectly fine. So I think that these details, the devil is in the detail. And so it's very important for people to understand, you know, the vegetables, legumes that contain carbohydrates, these are very good sources of carbohydrate, unless you have some particular intolerance. And that should be the majority of your calories. So that's an important point.
Good. Okay. Well, so, let's give out some resources. First of all, your book really lays the groundwork for it, for us, The Longevity Diet, Discover the New Science Behind Stem Cell Activation and Regeneration to Slow Aging, Fight Disease, and Optimize Weight. And there's also the website for the medicinal products, Prolon, which we hope that, you know, a lot of health practitioners listen to this broadcast, and we hope that they'll begin to think of accessing this program for some of their, you know, difficult to treat patients with diabetes, with mild cognitive impairment, with cancer in some cases, perhaps even as an adjunct to chemo, accentuating the benefits of the chemo. And also there's a website for the Create Cures Foundation. Is that right?
Yes, createcures.org. And also Prof. Walter Longo Facebook page, mm-hmm. where we sort of update and tell people about the new studies out there, mostly not ours, but also ours. And that's if people follow that page, you know, every couple of days we post articles that people that we have pre-screened and we feel they are very useful. And I should say about the diseases, I should say that the doctors should be very careful because, you know, the FDA regulates this. And I think that any combination of fasting mimicking diet with disease should be done in combination with standard of care. It shouldn't be a replacement to treat or prevent the diseases. You know, the doctor, of course, can make their call, but it should really be handled like a clinical trial. Even if it's an N of one, it should be a single patient clinical trial, with the patient understanding that this is not being fully tested for that particular treatment. Mm-hmm. And
it's not a panacea. We're not a one note Charlie's about the efficacy of this for all manner of disorders, right?
Yeah, it's not, and also there are rules, and it's good to have rules, and the FDA put them out there, and basically trying to say, well, we don't want the situation where everybody start improvising to either treat diabetes or cancer, etc., and maybe abandon standard of care treatments for the sake of these not fully tested interventions, which could benefit some people, but could also hurt some other people. Now, we haven't seen any negative effects so far of the fasting mimicking diet. But I'm saying in general, if somebody's going to use it for a disease, it should be in combination with standard of care. And even though the diet is there as a support, the patient should understand that this is not there to treat or prevent any diseases.
Indeed. And that's what we call intelligent medicine, the best of both worlds. So I want to really thank you and congratulate you on some really, really exciting and provocative research, and also your very, very careful adherence to the scientific principle, which is to go in with skepticism, to have a hypothesis, but be open to alternative interpretations, and to hew to the results of your findings. You certainly exemplify good science in the service of our ultimate goal, which is to get people to stay healthy and live longer.
Yes, and that's always been the goal in mind is you know, if this was done for somebody that I know, how would they want to proceed, right? You don't want to tell them if they don't have any alternatives, or, you know, tough luck, you're just going to have to do what's there and nothing else. But at the same time, you don't want to tell them, oh, you know, I have something for you that is going to work for sure. And so you just have to navigate that territory and try to do as much as possible in a very careful way, so that that until we do have FDA trials or bigger trials, they can still be helped with a reasonable intervention.
Indeed, and we look forward to hearing more from you about your future research findings. Thank you very much, Dr. Walter Longo, for joining us today.
Oh, thank you.
My pleasure.